Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Central Ohio Fair of weekday and weekend local farmers markets grows every year. How can you get the most from your farmers market experience, and what are the differences between the markets? We've invited Edible Columbus publisher and editor-in-chief Tricia Wheeler. She's a trained chef, and she also teaches cooking in a variety of Central Ohio venues. Edible Columbus is part of the Edible Communities family of publications, which is the first ever winner of the James Beard Foundation Awards Publication of the Year. Congratulations to Edible Communities, and also happy anniversary to Edible Columbus. It's celebrating 1 year, right, Tricia?
Yes. Thanks, Ann.
You're welcome. And also with us is David Weibel. He is the executive director of the North Market, including the Saturday Morning Farmers Market. Welcome to the show, David.
Good morning, Ann.
And finally, Adam Welly. He's the a farmer, chef, co-founder, and co-owner of Wayward Seed Farm. It's an organic method farm providing heirloom and Ohio heritage vegetables to local chefs and the rest of us. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hi, Ann.
So how many, could there ever be too many farmers markets, number one? And how do we even describe the growth right now? David?
Well, they are true markets. So when you say, can there ever be too many markets, I think the consumers and the marketplace will determine by sales and demand of whether or not there will be too many markets as the market continues to grow. That being said, since 2006, the state of Ohio recorded approximately 600 farmers markets in the state of Ohio. Now, just 5 years later, they're recording about 1,000, which when I was doing my calculations this morning, that's a 66% growth in farmers markets in just 5 years. And that I recalculated that and recalculated that, but it's a 66% growth, which I think in this day and age with the economy and with the economy in retail especially, that would be considered explosive growth.
And Adam, is there enough, or is there too much for you to handle at this point? That's kind of a dumb question to ask a grower, but
demand is way too aggressive right now for us to meet. But we're really focused on looking at the communities. This growth has correlated with communities demanding there be a farmers market there, whether it's Dublin or Bexley and some of the outlying communities in Columbus. And I think in relation to what Dave just said, the markets that are going to make it and that are going to thrive and sustain are going to be the ones where people in their community really reach out every single week and say, we want to support farms and we want to have good, high-quality local products.
You know, Worthington Farmers Market, the one I go to, has been around forever. And I wondered, with all these other ones popping up around, would it be affected? But every week I go there and it seems more crowded than ever. How does that happen, Tricia?
Well, I've also been going to Worthington for the last 10 or 12 years, and I used to be able to go early, relax, talk to everybody, move around, and now I have to get there right when it opens, and the conversations are a lot shorter these days, and the people are everywhere, but it's exciting to see, and the growth is wonderful, so I'm happy for the farms to be able to be represented there and to sell out, hopefully, week after week, and to see more people in the community enjoying that space.
We're talking about local farmers markets. If you are a consumer at your local farmers market and you want to tell us about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. When do you know, Adam, when it's time to open up a farmers market in a community? How do you know that there's the economies of scale to support one?
Well, it's been interesting in that regard. We've had two markets that we've started, most notably the Wexner Market and the Dublin Market, where we had people in those with Wexner, an organization, and in this case Dublin, people approached us and said, hey, we'd like farmers to come to our community and start setting up. And it took a little while to research and see if it was going to work marketing and be able to seize on enough customers. And we're making inroads there. I mean, we've been at Dublin for two seasons now, and we're working with the Dublin School District to bring kids and families there. And in the case of the market of 15th and High with Wexner, we've had great support with their marketing tools. So we've been approached many times, and now we're starting to actually turn down a few people that approach us and say, you know, having perhaps a farmer's market at a car dealership maybe doesn't
stretching
strike
it.
It's stretching it a little bit. But in this case, you know, we've had a lot of good community outreach, and we've been able to meet people in the middle and help with marketing and some of the things that don't cost a lot of money to start a market, but you do need a cadre of volunteers and people that are willing to step up and put effort into developing the plan.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and check us out there and post your question or comment there. There's more to a farmer's market. Now, when I was growing up, we'd go to the farmer's market in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was just farmers, and it was just produce. That's all it was. Now there are artisans there, and there's, you know, food processors and that kind of a thing. How big of a deal is that getting to be, David? Because I know at the North Market, that's part of the matrix already.
Well, when you look at the North Market, we have two components on Saturdays. We have our farmers market outside in the East Pavilion of the market, and then we have the market house itself, which houses 35 individually owned and operated family businesses that are food and food-oriented, and you have food artisans and people that are baking and making chocolate and making ice cream and the like. But when you take that model into sort of the true farmers market model at Clintonville or Worthington, you have food artisans that are making products and bringing them to the farmers market itself. And in most cases, they are taking local products, locally grown products, and the term is value-added, Adam, is that correct? And they are adding value, so they are taking fruits and making jams and jellies. They are taking grains and making granola and breads and things of that nature. So when you go to a farmers market today, you get a lot more than just fruits and vegetables.
Bev in Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Bev.
Nothing like trying to talk on the phone in park and do things.
Oh my goodness! Pull over and talk. Don't.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was just listening to the wonderful talk about farmers markets, and I just wanted to share the fabulous farmers market that there is in Athens County on State Street. At the height of the summer, they have up to 160 vendors and mostly organic foods, but everything locally grown, and it's just fabulous.
Yeah, that's something to remember when you're traveling down in when you're traveling anywhere on the weekends, there's probably a farmer's market in the community that you're traveling through, right, Tricia?
There yes. are. The great thing about Athens is that it's year-round.
Okay.
So it's open all year on Saturdays, and then from April, oh gosh, I think it's through November, it's open also on Wednesday morning, and it's just great.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Bev.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thanks. Tricia, have you been to that one?
I have not, but my editor, Colleen, has been several times, and we've actually sourced a lot of stories from down in that area. A lot of interesting things going on, and I think the bridge between what they're doing in Columbus is getting closer together.
160 vendors, is that big, Adam, or is that yeah. I'm trying to get a grasp on what's big. How many, for instance, are at Worthington?
Worthington, there's quite a few. I think there's over 100
okay.
at Worthington. Someone might be able to correct me on that. And that's quite a large market. I mean, these smaller weekday markets that we're running, you're talking about anywhere from maybe 18 to two dozen vendors.
Mm-hmm.
And the size of the smaller markets is correlating to market demand. You know, we could want 50 vendors if we wanted to market that. And that could draw more people. But we see the growth in those markets to happen slowly and manageably because you want the farms to do well. You don't want to bring someone and market a farmer's market and say, well, we don't have the community support for you to travel an hour and a half here to sell your produce or sell your bread or something. So weekday markets much smaller, and Saturday markets tend to be destination places and very interactive. So you see large farmer's markets on Saturdays.
Darlene in Westerville, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was wondering if the growth in the use of CSAs parallels the growth in the farmers markets, and if there are perhaps people who cross-pollinate, so to speak.
Who would like to? Adam?
Well,
Adam Welling?
Good one to answer.
We run a large CSA farm, and to be honest, yes, we were looking for distribution opportunities.
Explain what a CSA farm is, though, first.
A CSA is a community-supported agriculture where folks purchase a share of the farm before the season, and it allows the farm to acquire operating costs before the season and to plan strategically about what crops they're going to grow. And they share the bounty of that harvest throughout the season, ranging anywhere between 15 to maybe even 36 weeks, depending on who you're purchasing from. And it's a great opportunity for farms to grow slowly. It allows them to take on capital and it allows them to buy equipment. And I do think it is, in addition to the farmers market growth, CSA is the number one catalyst to grow the local food system right now, particularly in small organic vegetable growers who are first-generation farmers who are acquiring land and equipment and taking that long journey towards success. So CSA growth and farmers markets correlate.
I think you're also seeing along the CSA concept at the North Market, and it's really not specifically a CSA, but when we look at the Greener Grocer, they have a program called the Market Bag, which is a similar type program, but the Greener Grocer goes out and sources and partners with local growers throughout the growing community. So it's sort of a CSA type concept. And also now Blues Creek Farms, our butcher, they also have what would not be a CSA, but maybe more of a subscription series where you can make a contribution early on and then you will receive various cuts of meat throughout the subscription series. So it's kind of this new partnership retailing concept with the grower or the producer, which is getting a stronger foothold.
And I would also just add that to your question, can you be a hybrid? Are you joining a CSA and still shopping farmers markets? From personal experience, I would say definitely. We always pick up our CSA first and look at what we get really excited to get our CSA and look at what's in there that week. And then we supplement our shopping with our local eggs and meat and cheese and other items that maybe aren't featured in the CSA, and then take that back and prepare our meals for the week.
Thank you, Darlene, for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation comes your way starting at 2 o'clock today and every day, Monday through Friday, on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. In the weather forecast, today partly sunny, a high of 76 degrees. Tonight partly cloudy, a low of 55. Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the late afternoon and partly sunny otherwise, a high on Wednesday of 78. And then Wednesday night, showers and thunderstorms likely, low 64. Right now, we have 66 degrees at 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about farmers markets. You have a favorite farmers market that you shop? Give us a call. Tell us why, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are David Weibel from the North Market, Adam Welly from Wayward Sea Farms, and Tricia Wheeler from Edible Columbus. We have an email from Maria. She says, why is not there a farmer's market that is open 7 days a week, European style? It's hard to make it to markets on Saturday mornings during very limited hours. And I'll say, I mean, I understand what a question is, particularly if you have a kid in sports. It's almost impossible. Adam?
We'll get there.
That's right. We want to get to that.
We'll get there. We've made inroads. And when you think about what's offered at whether it's North Market or Clintonville or Worthington on Saturday, you're seeing this explosive growth of artisans that are additional to the fruit and vegetable growers that have been there for generations. And what you're starting to see take shape, I believe, is the idea of what a local diet's going to become. And if we can kind of cradle that a little bit, and we can see some of our producers grow into a size that's a little bit more economically sustainable and capitalized, you're going to see the potential for people to be able to sell produce or artisan goods every single day. And obviously, my experience working at the North Market before I even started this farm, you see that, you know, whether it's Jenny from Jenny's Ice Creams or, for example, my friend at Sassafras Bakery in Worthington, you know, you're seeing people have this idea of eating local every single day. And that's, I guess, the marketplace has to really be there for a European-style market to occur every day. And we need a lot of infrastructure as farmers to be able to make that possible as well.
And well, to add on that, Adam, I do think you could it wouldn't be a stretch to call the North Market somewhat of a European market. And when you look at the work that's being done by Michael Jones at the Greener Grocer and their hard work to partner with local growers throughout the growing season, you could really say there's a farmer's market in the North Market 6 days a week. We're not open on Mondays, just a handful of the merchants are there. And then when you extend that, when you look at the other merchants within the market, the Blues Creek, they are raising their own meat and butchering it on the spot. We have artisan bakers and local cheeses. So I think if you come to the North Market, you can buy locally, eat locally, and enjoy that European market experience 6 days a week.
Billy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Good morning. I'd just like to just make a comment. I have shopped at the North Market for the last 20, 25 years. There's some great venues in the North Market. I've been to the Worthington Market, but I've got to tell you, I'm really, really impressed with the East End Market. Been there a week, and just wanted to touch base and say it's really one of my favorites, and just wanted to add that comment to you. All right?
Yeah, sure, Billy. Thanks for the call.
My pleasure. Thank
Tricia,
you.
You have a class coming up in July that revolves around shopping farmers market, and you're using East End as your territory. Yeah.
Yes, and we've been teaching cooking lessons out at Easton. MI Homes has generously given us their kitchen to teach out of, and it was a great connection this year that the Easton Farmers Market started. And I've had questions from students over the last year and a half. You know, what do I do when I get my CSA and I'm not sure what the ingredients are? And I walk around the farmers market, I'm not sure what to buy or how to incorporate it into recipes, and I think that's the tool that we're trying to accomplish with that class, is to walk around together, shop together, and just from my chef perspective, say why I would buy what I was buying that week, and we're going to spontaneously cook a meal after our shopping experience.
So what makes a great farmers market to you?
Gosh, to me... I don't know. I love them for so many reasons, but I think I probably have never found a farmer's market that I didn't like something about, you know, whether it's finding the little hidden jewel, just the person who's growing raspberries in their backyard at a really small market that I love. At Easton last week, somebody had just little plastic cups of mulberries, and it brought me back to when I was a child, and I used to have stained purple fingers from picking the mulberries in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, food is so important to our family when it's sourced local. I have a daughter who says after everything she eats, is it local? I mean, it's pretty comical now. So I think for me, it's that community, that family experience, and I enjoy them all.
Adam, in your essay in Edible Columbus this month, you talked about something that I guess is obvious, and I know I've always noticed it in the North Market for sure, but just the camaraderie between the growers, the vendors, the different people that sell at the farmers markets.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you're talking about farms that have been around for multiple generations that have established systems and own land, and then you're seeing this new growth, young people coming into the marketplace that are just getting started, that are ambitious, and it seems like there's great connectivity between everyone, and I think we're all there not just to sell things, but you know, these are friendships we're finding. I mean, there's people I've met, just the customer base, business owners that I've got to know through it, and it's really kind of enriched our business. And we've built our business and the ideas of what we're going to do in the community around that engagement that we found at farmers markets. Because people tend to tell you what they're looking for in terms of whether it's activism, food politics. People want to talk about food when they come to a farmers market.
We have an email from Heather. She says, I just discovered the publication Edible Columbus, and I love it. I love reading about farmers in my local community. The cover of the current edition makes my mouth water. Big plump tomatoes. I cannot wait for tomato season. It inspired me to take my three-year-old daughter this weekend to pick strawberries, which was a great experience and was comparable to buying them at the grocery. Thanks for having this subject today. You're welcome, Heather. We have an email from Callie. Callie Yuga. She wants us to talk about the E. coli outbreak in Europe. She says she goes to India every year, and we have a farm, but I fall sick from eating fresh organic food. Fresh food is inherently dangerous. Boy, what do you say to that, Adam Welly? Fresh food is inherently dangerous.
I absolutely disagree. I think we need more dirt in our diet. I think, you know, when you talk about transparency and we talk about food safety, and I think that local food is not it's not impossible for local food to there to be an outbreak or something, a health risk associated with local food. But I think when you talk about small growers, small batches of food, a lot of care placed into quality, I think you start seeing the risks of fresh food mitigated immensely when you're talking about food that's grown on a very small scale versus this very industrialized system that we really don't know where things come from, and things run through the distribution mechanism. It slows down that step of how quickly you get your food and how nutrient dense it is. So I'm eating every day the fresh vegetables.
I can't remember if it was the spin. I think it was the tomato thing a couple years ago when there was an outbreak, an E. coli outbreak, or some kind of illness related to tomatoes, and people would put up in their windows, "We serve locally grown tomatoes."
Well, I think the other issue that that Adam touched on a little bit too is just traceability.
Right.
I think when you went back to that the situation with the tomatoes and even the situation recently in Germany, the food system is so large that people didn't know whether it was lettuce or sprouts or jalapeno peppers. And I do think when you buy locally and you have a relationship with your individual grower and farmer and producer, there's a higher level of traceability and understanding of where your food came from.
Mm-hmm. Tricia, we were talking about you mentioned, you know, people don't even know how to cook some foods they see at the farmer's market. Some of it's so unusual now to us now. Tell us about, between you and Adam, I suppose, what's out there now that's unusual, and what are you finding to do with it?
You know, I think the best thing to do is if you're shopping, ask the farmer or the person that you're buying it from questions about the ingredient. They can usually say, this is great sautéed, or this needs slowly braised, or this is a heartier green, and no, eat this fresh, go home and make a salad now. You know, I think they can give you tips on how to prepare it. But I think that the best thing is you can also Google and look up the origins of the ingredient and how it's prepared. But I think just trying new things and getting new things into your diet is always just fun. And I find when I bring new ingredients to my classes that people just hang on every word of, what do you do with, you know, this black radish or this watermelon radish, and these heirlooms, and these vegetables are beautiful. They're not only taste great, but they're beautiful for presentation and stuff. So I just encourage you to ask questions at the time you're buying them.
Well, and I think the other thing that's important with farmers markets, and we can talk about things being more nutritious and supporting local economies and things of that nature, but when you buy food at a farmers market, plain and simple, it tastes better.
Absolutely.
So I think the other thing then in terms of preparing things, it's simple food prepared simply. So the food is, as I said, tastes great. So it doesn't need a lot of preparation. You know, slicing those beautiful tomatoes that you see on the cover of Edible Columbus for this quarterly issue. I mean, it's the food tastes great, and that makes a big difference. And there is a difference between what you can find in the grocery store versus what you find that is tree-ripened or picked the day of the farmer's market in farmer's markets.
Adam, how do you decide when you're going to introduce something new and how you're going to introduce it to your customers?
Well, one thing that's interesting about Wayward is that we grow what we like to grow. We get good feedback from our customers, but you know, people that have been our CSA members are like, "Oh, too many beets, too much Swiss chard," and the big thing is every year is different. I mean, some years we just grow fantastic onions and greens, and other years it's roots and hot weather crops. So we're always trying to probe for flavor and consistency of quality now that we've been in the business a little bit, a little while. I think the other thing we really need to think about is what's grown together goes well together on the plate. I mean, right now you have things like strawberries, you have things like scallions, you have your early season stuff. Combine those things into things you know how to make. I mean, if you want a really nice salad and you like salads, combine those ingredients that are available at the same time, and you're going to generally come up with something fantastic to eat. So we try to push our customers a little bit and try them to get to know new things, because that's what makes cooking exciting when you're mm-hmm. always trying new varieties.
I would imagine that the CSAs help with that. They're kind of forcing, you got into this, now here's what we're giving you this week. Do something with it.
Yeah, I mean, we have established customers that love kohlrabi. You know,
that hadn't heard of it 5 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And this explosive growth in the consumption of kale. Mm-hmm. You know, people love kale now. And I remember just even 3 or 4 years ago, people were like, oh, kale again. And now it's everywhere. People are eating raw kale salads, you know, right now.
They're bragging about mm-hmm. growing it in their own gardens.
Absolutely.
Steve in West Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I used to go to a lot of farmers markets. I'd like to know, what do you do with your produce that you don't sell?
Adam?
Well, in the beginning, we composted a lot of food. We also have great connections with the food bank in Union County, and we were able to take foods, put them back in our cooler, and distribute those on Monday morning to families that are in need. And in the future, what we'd like to see is very much a planned way for our farm to grow. So we're doing more processing and value-added products, so we don't have overages, so we're not throwing food away. That's a real key for farms. I mean, mitigating waste is a way to become profitable and sustainable. So,
well, thanks for giving your produce to the kitchen areas. I'll keep shopping there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Dan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I love the show and also the previous show.
Thank
about
you.
Local economies and local food. And was wondering if you might want another resource for preparing the foods that you buy at the farmer's market. And years ago, I actually from a CSA recommendation, I picked up this book. It's called From Asparagus to Zucchini, A Guide to Farm Fresh Seasonal Produce. It's produced by Madison Area Community Supported Agriculture Coalition, another state, but I think it's been a real good resource.
Everyone's nodding their heads in here.
Okay,
Dan.
So it's, you know, I'm just not much of a cook, but I can go here and look it up by the vegetable itself, and then gives me several different recipes for preparing.
All right. Thank you, Dan, for that idea.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to give us a call. Tell us about your favorite farmer's market and any other questions you might have for our guests, David Weibel of the North Market, Adam Welly of Wayward Seed Farms, and Tricia Wheeler of Edible Columbus. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Chris. He says, hi, I have a question for Adam Welly. How do CSAs, community-supported agriculture, fit into the economics of farming in light of the growth in farmers' markets? So maybe the question is there a drop-off because there's so many more farmers' markets, or what's the relationship there, Adam?
Not at all. I mean, many of the CSA farms are using the opportunity to go to a farmers' market and sell retail and also use it as a delivery point. So you see a lot of cost-sharing in terms of the distribution of your products. And one thing that the farmers markets do is allow you to develop individual relationships with families and community members that eventually will become your CSA members, because they find that, oh, I shop with you every single week and I'd like to support your farm in a greater way. How can I do that? And CSA is the best way to do that. And the people that that aren't interested in CSA, then they are our regular customers and they come every week and buy a few things. And that's great too, because they support a lot of farms that way. So I think that there has not been a drop-off or some type of hesitance from the consumer community of having more retail opportunities as a way to drive down CSA sales. We've seen nothing like that.
We had a caller. They asked if there are any farmers markets in low-income neighborhoods, and we know that the Columbus Public Health Department has 3 farmers markets during the summer. They operate, I think, 3 or 4 times during the summer. If you want any more information about that, we'll post their website at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. There is this issue of food deserts. And the Dispatch did a story a couple months ago saying there really aren't any food deserts. It's sort of a myth, but that's not what I'm hearing. I get really different stories when you talk to different people about that. Any thoughts about that, Adam?
I think they do exist. I think there's a lot of validity to the fact that there are food deserts. I think what we need to talk about more acutely is what's the gap education-wise for people to have skills to cook, to drive demand for fresh food. And the people, and I think what the Dispatch article is really touching on is that people that aggressively want to buy food and have the skills have access to food. But what about the people that maybe aren't quite sure what to do with fresh foods and maybe don't have the skill set? And I think that is really applies to the food desert issue immensely, is if you don't have really good access and education, then you're not going to see a growth of demand.
I was talking to the folks at the Worthington Food Pantry, and they said they were going to start stacking secondhand pots and pans and utensils and things, because that's one thing a lot of people don't have, particularly if they have a really transient lifestyle because of income shifts and that kind of thing and losing jobs. They don't have that stuff that, you know, I've been lugging around for 40 years. 614-292-8513. And David from German Village, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
You bet.
My question was, I love the North Market, by the way. I think everything about it is very cool. I enjoy it. I like the way the thing smells.
Thank you.
Me too.
My question is, a lot of the vendors, the organic vendors, occasionally I've asked them, you know, are you really organic? Because historically, a lot of people who claim they are not. I thought it would be a good idea if the vendors there would display their certification agencies as well as their organic logo and their organic number. And these things, because it's real difficult to become certified organic. And I think there should be a little more clarity and transparency concerning the people that are organic.
And just to add on to that, I really appreciated it when I was buying from a farmer's market a couple of weeks ago, that the grower, I didn't ask, but the grower offered the fact that they're not certified, they couldn't afford to be. But, you know, if I believed them, you know, everything was fine. Adam?
Well, when we started out, we were one of those growers. We didn't think we could certify. We thought it was too expensive. And I think as we went along, we found out that it's not that expensive. And I think I want to say this directly. I mean, the record keeping and the things that the journey we've had to take to become a certified organic farm, we're a newly certified organic farm by OFA, it was worth it. It made us better farmers. It made us keep costs more effective. We've really looked at our unit costing a lot more closely. And I think that what he's asking is an important question is, as we see this growth of farmers markets move forward, we're going to see consumers come to us and want that next level of transparency, which is, hey, don't just tell me you're organic or you're organically grown, let's get certifications. And there's cost share grants that are out there from the state to give you a 75% cost share on your certification. And growers should want to be certified. I think it's a good way to show people that you're willing to take on a third-party inspection and that you're willing to show that you're professional. And we've taken that journey from step one of a half acre to being at this size now, and we feel that certified is an important step for local farms to take.
It's a step, though. Some people start out like you did, not, and then they just gain steam and move on. David, thank you for that call. We have an email from Mary Jo. Well, first of all, we're just going to have to hold on to our horses and take a little break. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I lost her.
Did you see Stephen Colbert on the Tonys? On the next Fresh Air, Stephen Colbert talks about singing and dancing with a hat and cane in the New York Philharmonic production of Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. The filmed version opens in theaters this week. Of course, we'll also talk about the Colbert Report. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air coming your way starting at noon today on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Today, partly sunny and a high of 76 degrees expected, partly cloudy tonight, the low 55. Then Wednesday, a chance of showers moves into the picture. Showers and thunderstorms in late afternoon tomorrow, partly sunny and a high of 78. Wednesday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely and a low of 64. Thursday, showers and thunderstorms also likely, but only in the morning. Mostly cloudy, a high of 77. Right now we have 66 degrees at our studios here on the OSU campus. Coming up tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on WOSU TV 34, Nova investigates musical minds. Traveling around the globe to meet people like a man who was struck by lightning and was subtly inspired to become a pianist. Nova investigates the extraordinary impact that music can have on the human brain. Watch Musical Minds tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, on WOSU TV 34. Don't forget, 89.7 NPR News needs your help. Donations are welcome, automatic and monthly. Visit wosu.org/sustainer.
Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We're talking about farmers markets. If you want to give us a call or email us, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Tell us about your favorite farmers market. Email from Keith. He says, I love the North Market, but the crowds and parking situation have gotten to be so bad that I have to schedule my shopping to avoid lunchtime on weekdays, and I won't even attempt to go there on a weekend anymore. Well, any tips for the for the shopper that heads to North Market?
Well, and I don't want to be flip, but we have this comment around the market from time to time. It says, you know, it's so crowded, nobody goes there anymore. So, we have a limited parking because of our location. We have 140 parking spaces, and we work hard to preserve those spaces for our market shoppers. Our research shows us that the parking lot visits about 1 hour, and I know there are some times when you need to be a little more patient to get a parking space at the market, but there is available parking within the radius of the market.
There's a parking structure right across the street.
900 spaces across the street in the parking garage. It's well designed in a way in which people don't even know there's a parking garage there sometimes. It looks very nice from the streetscape standpoint. But
it's right on Vine there, right?
Yeah, it's right on Vine. I'm empathetic and appreciative of the comment, but we're also, on the other hand, flattered that so many people are filling our parking lot. It's a tribute to the market itself.
And it's not just North Market. A lot of people want to go to the farmer's market. You mentioned, Tricia, there was the day was when you could go and it'd be relaxing. If you went early, you could find a spot. You could get first in line for the strawberries. And, you know, it can get crowded and irritating, but if you just chill out.
Yeah, I think when we go, it's our Saturday morning family time, and so we enjoy that. We enjoy running into people we know. We enjoy seeing the vibrant exchanges that are going on. So I think it's just, for us, we appreciate the growth.
I want to just continue our conversation a little bit about, you know, the labeling thing, organic, non-organic, certified organic or not. And, you know, a lot of folks say, well, it's made in Amish country. It's grown in, you know, the Amish grow it. It must automatically be, even if the Amish are growing it, you still want to look for that organic certification. There's no assumptions there, right?
No. Each individual farm has their practice. And when you go to purchase at a farmer's market, you have to either there will be a third-party certification so you can identify with those standards, or you have to get into an in-depth conversation and talk to farmers about what their practices are. Never assume. You know, it's okay to ask questions. Farmers are definitely, in this day and age, willing and want to come forward with their practices. And being a savvy consumer is a way to get better quality food.
What about when you're buying from somebody who didn't actually grow the food, David?
Well, I think the next step in farmers market regulation or relationship with the seller and the grower is the whole concept of sell what you grow. And I think what we are trying to do at the North Market is really have a transparency with the seller and the buyer, because I do think there are some situations where buyers are active in farmers markets buying products that they think that that seller in fact grew and in fact they didn't grow. And I think when you shop a farmers market, there's sort of an implicit trust that the person you're buying from is a person that grew it. And we are trying to take the next step to ensure that we have a market that I know when I'm talking to Adam, he grew it. And it's a subtle distinction, but I think it's an important one for the growth and the integrity of farmers markets in the future.
Is that an issue for you, Adam, or the people you talk to?
Yeah, I think all producers that are really working hard to provide the best quality products to consumers want the marketplace to have the highest level of ethics and integrity. And what you're seeing in other markets in the United States, particularly the Green City market in Chicago, they're requiring third-party certification, whether you're certified organic, naturally grown, or some level of certification to say, this is what our standard is, here's full transparency. And that's the leading edge. We might not see that here for several years, but I think as the consumer becomes aware and requests that kind of transparency, we might see that in the marketplace.
Ann in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for this program.
You're welcome.
I have a question. We've used organic foods for years and certainly support the movement. It occurred to me, though, recently that a lot of organic foods are grown with animal manure, which can be a source of E. coli. And so I wondered what the distinctions are there in terms of what fertilizers are used and whether they're moving towards non-animal fertilizers.
Adam Wally?
I think that there's a question, particularly on the national policy level, about food safety as it relates to animal manures, but particularly in certified organic farms, which we are, you have very specific regulations on what you have to do with animal manures. So you either have to apply them in the winter, the season before, 180 days. There are specific rules about the application of animal manures, particularly raw manures. Additionally, there are very specific regulations on what is compost. So if you're composting animal manures, they have a specific temperature that the compost has to be turned at to kill pathogens. So in this environment of highly regulated certified organic food, there is aggressive due diligence that farmers have to apply that. Also, I want to suggest that, you know, the movement is tied to agrarian agriculture. Many of us have started these farms with the idea of retying ourselves back to animals on the farmstead. I mean, good fertility, good practice, good minerality, and most importantly, good tasting food is tied to this idea of pastured animals, building soil, and doing that through manures or residues is really important to soil fertility. And it's one of our greatest assets here in the state of Ohio that we do have the livestock industry to get that fertilizer at an effective and cheap price.
Thanks, Ann, for that call. We have some emails. We have a bunch of emails. One from Mary Jo. She says, I'm afraid to patronize farmers markets because I fear that nearby stores, which are open year-round and try to have organic and some local produce, such as Fresh Market and Whole Foods, will not be able to stay in business. Any danger of that, David Weibel? You've been in North Market probably has a certain amount of competition now that it didn't before.
I don't, you know, it might be a little bit the other way around. I don't think you have to worry about Whole Foods and Fresh Market staying in business. They're both very healthy, robust, publicly held organizations. When I say it might be, you have to worry about the other way around, is if you look at grocery retailing, Whole Foods and Fresh Market, they are trying to be more and more day in and day out like a farmer's market. And they're trying to be more market-like. And I think they believe that the whole fresh positioning is fresh, merchandising is fresh, selling more local products is beneficial for their bottom line. And it's a successful formula. So I don't think you have to worry about Whole Foods, the North Market putting Whole Foods out of business. I think you have to worry about larger corporate entities taking a farmer's market model and scaling that in a large fashion that would put pressure on small individually owned and operated farmer's markets.
I was in a corporate market the other day, and they were selling what they said were heirloom tomatoes. Tricia, I mean, how do you ever know? I mean, I think I read about it in your magazine that they may look like it, but they may not be it. What's the difference? How do you know?
Adam, can you answer that? If they're a hybrid,
because they're a ripply and brownish, reddish, greenish looking, and
they can be grown to look like
In California and Mexico, there are certified organic producers that are putting right now, or even in Florida, really soon, you're going to see certified or quote unquote certified organic tomatoes come to the marketplace, most notably at organic chain large groceries. However, heirloom tomato to me personally would be something you would probably see between July 15th and September 15th. And that 8 weeks, you have to capture that sun and that sunlight and that taste. And I think that's really what you see at the farmer's market. You see things at their peak, and that's why they taste so good. So buying heirloom tomatoes in like May, you're not going to be happy spending $6 a pound on that product.
Because it's been bred to produce in May.
You're thinking about something like a tomato that's picked very green, because heirloom tomatoes are very fragile. And so the idea that you're picking something in Mexico that's green and not ripe, you're shipping it, distributing it, it's not going to taste like that juicy brandy wine that you're going to get at North Market or Worthington on a Saturday morning, not even in the ballpark. So.
And that's where you just need to pick up a copy of Edible Columbus this month. And that's what an heirloom tomato is supposed to look like.
Yeah, it's all about tomatoes, by the way, this month. Edible Columbus, this season, I should say. It's a quarterly publication. Justin in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, Justin.
Hi. I wanted to mention something from a truck driver's perspective. I took a load recently to a honey producer that is is located in Central Ohio. And I asked them, because I didn't pick up the actual load at its source, but what it was 55-gallon barrels, steel drums that came from New Jersey from another driver, and that was from a port that the original source was Vietnam. And I asked them, you know, because I had bought stuff from them and I thought it was a local, producer. And they say that they do some of it, but, a lot of this stuff is not only, imported thousands of miles within the country, but, from overseas on a container. And, I mean, it was just amazing to see all those steel barrels, and it was honey, and going to a place that I thought was actually selling local honey. Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to comment on that?
Well, I think we need to make the distinction of what a local brand or a local company is versus a local farm that's doing direct marketing and direct sales. And I think you're going to find that when you search out local farms and you say, let's take a visit or let's see what you're doing, I think that would be the answer to the idea of importing food. There's a difference between importing food and distributing it locally as a local company and being a local producer. So I don't know of the company. I'm sure maybe they do buy some local honey, but they might be a honey company versus a beekeeper and a farm. So that's the distinction that I might see in that example.
Okay. We have an email from Heidi. She said, thank you for your program today. I'm the market manager at Easton's Farmers Market, and we are very impressed with seeing more women-owned and working farmers. Please talk about that. Cindy Bauer from Wild Hen Farm in Mount Perry, Ohio, is one of our vendors. It's a great incubator for small businesses that, from all over the place.
We see a lot of women growers at the market. Mary Bridgman.
That's right. Mary Bridgman, former colleague at the Dispatch.
Exactly. And Margaret Wentz at Somerset Herbs. And we see, it's almost at the market we don't make the distinction anymore. There's many women growers as there are male growers. And it's just kind of part of the landscape. And I think part, again, of the allure of farmers markets and the relationship of community that Adam talked about and this very special place that they have in our communities.
And Adam, your partner's a female.
Yeah. So, and also, I mean, the majority of my workers, my field workers are women. They aggressively are pursuing a career in farming. So I think it goes across the gender, race.
And the publisher of this great Edible Columbus is a woman.
Speaking of the double woman herself, email from Mike. I've never shopped at a farmer's market and was curious what I can expect on price-cost difference for produce at a farmer's market versus the same produce you would find at a conventional grocery store. Tricia, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. I find that if you eat seasonally and you buy what's in season, it's less expensive than necessarily buying it at a grocery store. So I think that's what you get when you go to a farmer's market. And I also, you know, certain things are a little bit higher sometimes with the organic practices and what goes into the cost of producing the actual items. But I feel like the benefits of knowing where your food comes from, supporting those farmers, knowing that money is going back into our local economy, it always makes me feel good every time I spend my money in that way.
Mm-hmm. Adam, is it tough to compete with the big grocery store chains and when it comes to price?
I don't even think we're trying to compete with them. We're trying to be better. And I think one specific point to price is two things. One, you're paying the real cost of the food. You're paying for the production costs. You're also, looking at things like specific practices like organic or IPM methods as it relates to pest management. The other thing is quality. I mean, when you buy, I've had people talk to me about buying, for example, our arugula in the fall and saying, well, I was able to keep this for 3 weeks in my crisper. And he said, 3 weeks, that's a long time. And people definitely correlate what they're spending with quality and how long it lasts. And in that regard, I think we really outcompete what the grocery store can do in terms of longevity of the product.
And if I just might add real quickly, the direct sale of the products Adam grows and sells at the marketplace, he gets the full value for that. He's not selling things at a fraction of the cost at wholesale or being negotiated down heavily by a buyer of a larger chain.
From Terry, an email, he says, a favorite memory from my childhood was watching my father pick the finest ears of corn from a farmer's roadside stand. He always said he wanted corn picked that morning. I think it used to cost about $1 a dozen. I hope I am not showing my age. On that note, happy Father's Day. Thank you, Terry. Gary writes, one of the highlights on Wednesdays at the Westerville Farmer's Market is the two caterers chef cooking with foods for sale at the market. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Then from Donnie, he says, as a resident and then a business owner in downtown Worthington, I've seen the beauty of the market on all layers, local foods from local farmers, keeping dollars in our community, but an offering of incredibly delicious food at an affordable price. But with the 80 vendors in Worthington's market, there's the answer to that question, it brings thousands each Saturday to our businesses, so it is a boost on another level. Are most of the farmers' markets woven into the cities the way they are in Worthington?
Not always.
Not all. It depends on zoning laws. I mean, for example, in Dublin, we're inside the Dublin Community Church's parking lot because there isn't a lot of sidewalk space. And we've been able to find a home there and a good working relationship with them. So some of them are in parking lots, and some of them have infrastructure like North Market does with fixed stall stands. So it's very diverse in terms of where the setup is going to be.
Well, yep.
I was just going to add, if Clintonville is also like Worthington, that you can walk around to the shops and enjoy
right
that
on the sidewalks
community
in front of them. Mm-hmm. Right. We're running out of time, and I want to thank David Weibel. He is the executive director of the North Market, including the Saturday Morning Farmers Market. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Adam Welly. He is farmer, chef, co-founder, and co-owner of Wayward Seed Farm. Welcome back, and thanks for being here, Adam.
Thanks, Ann.
And also, Tricia Wheeler. She's editor-in-chief and publisher of Edible Columbus. Tricia, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Sam.
And thanks for listening, and hope you enjoy your summer of shopping at your local farmer's market. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System.